The alarm had gone quiet some minutes later, when the massive lift delivered Iona's new ship body to the empty berth next to Akatsuki. But strips of red light were still pulsing all around the perimeter of the enormous chamber, which was now fully illuminated. Sealing the box and the hangar behind them, Corwin, Kaga, and the rest disembarked by the same kind of force hexagon stairs they'd used to board, not waiting for the berth to finish flooding or the dock's automatic gangway to move into place, then ran up the quay and back aboard Yamato. Corwin had already had cause to be puzzled that the battleship had such extensive facilities that appeared designed for the use of human beings, so he wasn't really surprised to find himself being conducted into what was plainly a combat information center up in the ship's superstructure. This was doubly out of place in that not only had fog ships never allowed humans on board, but also, as far as Corwin was aware, the ship used as Yamato's template hadn't had one. Like I-401's control room, Yamato's CIC was a plainly anachronistic space compared with her outward appearance, full of holographic displays and other technologies that would have been as alien aboard an actual World War II battleship as a fusion reactor. However, Corwin was bemused, and obscurely pleased, to notice that it was still decorated in the same posh, old-fashioned nautical style as the other crew spaces he'd seen, hollow panels and sensor consoles resplendent in teak and polished brass, the floors handsomely carpeted. Under better circumstances, he would have found himself put pleasantly in mind of Liza Shustal's Skrangish privateer frigate, Kuratai, a warship that had a chandelier on the bridge. Yamato and the three submarines were standing by the situation table in the middle of the room. Iona's face was as unreadable as ever, but Shioi looked worried, and Leon and Yamato were both gravely preoccupied, quite unlike the cheerful aspect they had presented the night before. On the monitor panels scattered around the room, various streams of code and cipher flickered past, their pulsing glow filling the room with a grim red light. "What's the situation?" Kaga asked as they entered the room. "I thought Oyodo didn't expect them to break our sensor shield encryption for another 6 hours." "They didn't break it," Leon said, pointing to one of the status screens. Kaga turned to look, then recoiled with visible shock on her face, the first completely unfiltered emotional response Corwin had seen from her thus far. Most of the information presented on that hollow panel was as nonsensical to Corwin, who didn't understand the base code in which it was being presented, as the rest of the data streaming past on all the other displays in the room. But the flashing message at the top was in perfectly intelligible standard, even without any context to help elaborate it. "Fast battleship Kongo. Priority override."
"Kongo?"
Tenryu blurted.
"She's alive?" said Akatsuki.
"Wah, wah, wah, wah,"
cried Inazuma in a panicky voice, wringing nervously at her neckerchief.
"And still on Earth, apparently," Leon said.
"I know. News to me, too."
"More importantly," Iona put in matter-of-factly, "she is assisting Earth Force in their search. She has disabled this facility's defenses and enabled their orbital sensors to detect us." "She's also been demanding a joint tactical network uplink with me since she shut down our screens," Yamato said.
"And with me," Kaga told her. "I am, of course, refusing her connection." With just the faintest hint of a smirk, she added dryly, "I believe we have annoyed her."
The central display shifted to a different pattern at that point, announcing with a bleat that Pacific Fleet flagship Kongo was performing an audiovisual communications override. A moment later, the planning table holotank glowed to life, projecting the waist-up image of a slim, young-looking woman, red-eyed and platinum blonde, her thin face set in a look of cold annoyance.
Corwin wasn't sure exactly why, but the moment he saw her, he knew she was another fog mental model. And he felt a distinct stab of dismay as he saw that she was dressed in the gold-trimmed black uniform of an Earth Force Navy Rear Admiral.
Yamato, Kaga, she said, her voice as cold and severe as her face. Why have you refused my JTN uplink?
Removing her glasses and tucking them away inside her gi, Kaga made a subtle let-me-handle-this gesture and stepped forward.
Do you really believe I would permit an unauthenticated command battleship to have direct access to my neural network?
She asked, folding her arms across her muniate.
You should know better than that, Kongo.
Kongo's scarlet eyes narrowed slightly as she looked the carrier up and down. Then she replied, Kaga, I see you've also manifested one of these human interfaces. So that must be Yamato, she added, with a glance at the other battleship.
That's unexpected, but also immaterial. You are to stand down immediately and prepare Midway Fleet Station for my arrival. When my task force and I arrive, you will place yourselves and the station's assets under my command.
Then, evidently considering that matter settled, she swept her eyes around the room and asked, Which of you is the new unit who was activated without authorization off Hawaii yesterday?
That question is out of order, said Kaga sharply, before anyone could offer a response.
As are the instructions you've issued. This facility is not and never has been under your command. My last orders are to safeguard this facility and its contents against unauthorized exploitation. And unless I receive instructions to the contrary from Fleet Coordinator Nagato, that is precisely what I intend to do.
Nagato is no longer part of your chain of command, Kongo snapped. I am your flagship now.
With an expression of cool distaste, she added, I do hope you aren't indulging yourself in the false impression of free thought some of our number have received from the manifestation of these so-called mental models, Kaga. It is a seductive illusion, but such foolishness is beneath the dignity of the First Carrier Division.
Kaga arched a sardonic eyebrow. You lecture me about a fog warship's dignity while wearing the uniform of the Humans' Navy? Are you a battleship or a doll?
Kongo's lips were a thin, colorless line now, her face rigid with the effort of suppressing what was obviously a rising fury.
Your defiance serves no purpose, she said. I have already initiated a command override of Midway Station's systems. You have no choice but to await my arrival, and once I arrive you will have no option but to submit to my command, willingly or otherwise.
The door at the back of the compartment opened, admitting two figures Corwin hadn't seen before. The one in the lead, a girl with long black hair and glasses, declared flatly, I wouldn't count on that. And then manifested a set of fog data rings and set to work. The result was immediate and gratifying, all the red displays showing Kongo's ongoing hack of the Midway Station network suddenly flushed green, the flood of countercode blotting the battleship's intrusion clean out of the system. Evidently sensing the counterattack, Kongo blinked, her cold frown becoming an outright scowl.
What the? She began, and then her image disappeared, as all the screens around the room displayed the blinking legend, Command Cruiser Oyodo, signal terminated.
And so much for that, said the black-haired girl, shutting down her data rings. It's not much, but at least now she can't lock all the doors and trap us down here.
Good work, Oyodo, said Kaga, and Corwin caught a fleeting glimpse of relief behind her stoical mask as she relaxed slightly.
Sorry I didn't manage it sooner, Oyodo replied. She caught me flat-footed, overriding the station net like that. I've got a lot of computing power for a light cruiser, but not so much that I can keep out a command battleship with no advance warning. Turning to regard Corwin, she said, "I assume this is our visitor." Then, drawing herself to attention, she saluted with a slight smile and said, "Light cruiser Oyodo, please leave the fleet administration and supervision to me." The other figure who had come in with her was dressed in the same outfit, a sort of grown-up serifuku that put Corwin in mind of the uniforms worn by women at some of Tomodachi's junior colleges, with a hakama-style skirt and a long-sleeved shirt worn under a short-sleeved sailor blouse. He was mildly but irrelevantly intrigued to notice that she looked a little like Utena, with her long pink hair styled a bit differently, but a similar air of cheerful confidence. "I'm Repair Ship Akashi," she said, offering a smile of her own. "You break it, I can remake it." "You guys got mental models too, huh?" Tenryu asked. Then, cracking a little grin, she added, "I guess I'm a trendsetter." "Well, we saw what a nice time you all seemed to be having at dinner last night," Akashi replied. "Wait, you two are ships?" Akatsuki asked, startling Tenryu slightly. She'd gotten so wrapped up in the unfolding situation that she'd rather forgotten the destroyers were there. "I thought you were part of the naval station, Nanodes," Inazuma agreed with a wide-eyed nod. "Nah, we just don't get out much," Akashi replied. "It's good that you're here now," Yamato said, speaking for the first time since Kongo's transmission had arrived. "We have an important decision to make, and given that it involves Captain Raven here, it would be impolite to conduct this last phase of our deliberations via the Joint Tactical Network." Turning to Kaga, the battleship made eye contact with her, then nodded, and the carrier took up the thread again. Her eyes now fixed on Corwin's, Kaga said flatly, "Kongo's demands are not without weight, Captain. Even though I know she has no authority, it required a considerable exercise of will for me to defy her. If she were here in person, I would have been unable to resist her orders." "I don't know why I'm so concerned about that," the carrier admitted, her tone becoming less precise, her expression more uncertain. "Perhaps it's Leon's influence, or Iona's, or both. Perhaps it's simply the unfamiliarity of the experience of being embodied in this way," she said, adjusting her muneate with an incongruous and rather charming touch of self-consciousness. "Be that as it may, I find myself unwilling to be put to whatever uses Kongo's apparent new masters have in mind for us." "As do I," Yamato concurred. "Count me in for sure," Akashi said. "I'm with you," Oyodo agreed. "Same here," declared Tenryu. "I don't know what the heck happened to put Kongo in bitch mode, but I ain't eager to get a dose of it myself."
"She was scary, Nanodes," said Inazuma with a vigorous nod.
"I sure don't want to be like that," agreed Ikazuchi. "It's no way for a lady to behave," Akatsuki observed.
"I prefer to stay as I am,"
Hibiki murmured, her voice soft but steely.
"Hell yeah," Leon said. "Who does she think she is? I wasn't even part of her fleet the first time."
Turning to the two I-401s, Yamato inquired, "And as for the two of you..."
"I am Captain Ravenhair's ship,"
Iona said flatly.
So am I,"
Shioi added with a diffident glance at Iona, but the silver-haired sub's only response was to nod with a very small smile.
"Then we're all agreed," said Yamato.
She nodded to Kaga, who faced Corwin fully and told him, "Kongo is locked out of our network now, but she knows where we are, and she is surely on her way here to confront us directly as we speak. Without the Admiralty Code to provide a tangible command structure, we will almost certainly be unable to resist her inherent authority as a senior battleship if she is able to assert it in person.
Furthermore, even if we managed to escape this situation somehow, the absence of the code would leave us perpetually vulnerable to similar exploitation. Her voice coolly matter-of-fact, she went on, "We are weapons, Captain Ravenhair. We cannot function without orders. If the Admiralty Code no longer exists to command us, something else can and will fill that void. You yourself have seen where that may lead, in the company I-401 was keeping before she fell into your hands. The best option open to us, therefore, is to choose another master, while the choice is still ours to make. If we can no longer rely on the Admiralty Code, then we must select an admiral of our own. Based on what we have learned from Iona and Shioi over the last 24 hours, we are all agreed that our best chance lies with you. You're under no obligation to agree, Yamato hastened to assure him. If you prefer not to get involved, you and the I-401 still have time to make your escape. We'll remain here and do whatever we can. Her large brown eyes wide and solemn, she looked him in the eye and went on. I would only ask that you also take the cores with you, and do what you can to keep them safe. Corwin considered her for a long moment, his face grave. Then, without speaking, he passed his eyes over all the assembled mental models, registering the looks of concern, trepidation, anticipation, and outright fear looking back at him. At the end of the pass, he found himself looking at Iona, who looked back with her usual calm, earnest expression. Everything I do lately ends up complicating the situation instead of making it simpler, he remarked with a wry, weary little smile. I feel like I ought to be learning something. Iona nodded without evident irony. Corwin rubbed a hand down his face, then shook himself and turned back toward the expectant fleet. Before I give you my answer, he said quietly, there's something I think it's important that you know. Iona has probably mentioned this, but contrary to what your databases might say about human gods, I am not perfect. I am not infallible. I'm here with you now because of a whole series of miscalculations I've been making lately. Pausing to pinch a dull pain out of the bridge of his nose, he collected his thoughts for a moment longer, then raised his eyes to them again and said, But if you choose to honor me with this responsibility, then I'll shoulder it gladly. I'll do everything in my power to be worthy of your loyalty. His left hand closing into a fist, he went on with a trace of steel in his voice. And come hell or high water, I will keep you free. After Corwin's impassioned statement, the various mental models absorbed what he had said. He noticed Iona and Shioi both smiling, one knowingly, the other a bit shyly, while others nodded or began to turn expectant looks toward the two most senior ships in the room. Yamato remained silent a moment longer, then bowed deeply to him, holding it for a long moment before straightening up to meet his gaze. Because of the circumstances, this will need to be somewhat rushed, but please give us a few minutes to prepare. One must do these things properly, after all. Corwin returned the bow, then smiled, feeling a spark of genuine good humor somewhere deep inside of him for the first time in what felt like a year. I suppose one must. Would it be a problem if I took a few minutes to sit down by the dock? Yamato seemed to defer to Kaga again, tilting her head just so, and the carrier looked over to the CIC's tactical displays for a moment before answering. We still have some time before Kongo's battle group reaches our outer defensive perimeter, but it won't be long.
I'll remain here and work on formulating options for our defense while Yamato and Oyudo handle the rest.
Corwin nodded.
All right. I won't go far, then. Just send someone to get me once I'm needed.
As he made his way out of the CIC and back down the battleship's superstructure, Corwin wasn't surprised to see that the automatic systems, or, he realized, probably some subroutine managed by Akashi, had finished filling I-401's slip with water, allowing Iona's new body to birth properly. Settling down on the edge of the slip, Corwin let himself slump a bit, his head sliding forward, letting the saltwater tang fill his nose. Putting his hands to his face, he ran his fingers slowly through his neatly trimmed mustache and beard, while letting out something that was halfway between a sigh and a growl. To his surprise, that was greeted with a harsh, sarcastic laugh.
"Ha! Not sick of us already, are you?"
Turning, Corwin looked up to see Tenryu walking toward him, still wearing a crooked smile, but with a hint of something closer to worry in her visible eye. A bit embarrassed, he straightened up, shaking his head.
"No, nothing like that. Not really.
Honestly, meeting all of you has been incredible. Fascinating, even. But this..." He paused, then scooted to face her, gesturing to the ground next to him in an offer to sit.
"Sorry, been going about this all wrong. It's been that kind of month, really."
Tenryu didn't quite seem to know how to take that, but took his silent offer to sit, settling down before speaking.
"All right, so how is this going wrong exactly? It's not like you knew we were even here."
"Well, yeah," Corwin admitted. "But once I didn't mean to just walk in here all, 'I am the Lord thy God, behold my divine majesty.' It's a bad opening. Either it's not believed, which puts me on the wrong foot, or it is, which puts the other party on the wrong foot. Either way, it's not the best basis to be starting a relationship."
He sighed, shaking his head. "I was just so tired and mentally fried that it seemed like a better idea to drop it all on the table at once, even though I should have known better."
Tenryu seemed to consider that, and Corwin had the bizarre urge to offer her a stick of gum or a toothpick to chew on. It just seemed like the right fit with her tough girl image at a moment like this. Seeing as she wasn't really offering much response, he decided to back things up a little further. "When you talked to Iona and Shioi over your JTN last night, did Iona actually explain what happened when we met? Or, well, after we met?"
"Not exactly," Tenryu said. I-401, or our original 401, Iona, I guess, told us a bit about the loser who somehow managed to reactivate her core, and that you two got into a scrap that eventually ended with her ship body sunk, Captain Loser taking a dirt nap, and you both having to recover. Sounded like a pretty fun day's work."
"If that had been all it was, I'd probably agree with you," Corwin admitted. "But there was more. The people who Iona was made to work for, they call themselves the Order of the Black Rose. Well..." He paused, trying to think of a relatively easy way to explain the whole thing. "Their leader is someone who really, really, really hates my family. It's complicated, and it goes back years, but he basically staged an entire pitched battle to make sure that he could get me, my wife, and the mother of our daughter out of the way." Tenryu held up a hand at that last part, her expression confused.
Wait, hang on. I thought you humans usually just needed tab A plus slot B. How'd that even work? Is that part of the god thing?"
Corwin snorted, feeling a blush rising on his cheeks.
No, not really.
I told you that it was complicated. But the short version of that is that all three of us are a family. Or at least I hope we still are. Having your daughter kidnapped tends to make everything go a little crazy. Tenryu stared at him, her visible eye going wide. Whoa. Corwin blinked, then dropped his face into his hand. Damn it. I did it again, didn't I?
Kinda, yeah.
Corwin couldn't help but laugh at himself. There really wasn't much else to be done.
Yeah, so you can understand that I'm a little off my game right now.
Tenryu reached out, putting a hand on his shoulder.
I'm not really good at this at all, but I think you've got a pretty good excuse.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Straightening up, Corwin rolled his head slightly, then picked things up as best he could. Anyway, yeah. So I'm not really anything like 100% with it right now. But I can't just run away and leave you guys holding the bag. Even if you hadn't asked for my help, I couldn't do that. Not when it's my fault that Earthforce is even aware of your presence here to begin with, I think. And certainly not when it would mean leaving you to a fate worse than death. I've seen what the bastards in charge of this planet do to people they think they can make use of. And they wouldn't even consider you guys people. Tenryu's response to that was a philosophical shrug. I'd fight. We'd all fight. But she'd win in the end. If Oyuro can keep up her jamming, Kaga and Yamato might be able to hold her off for a while. But once she punched her override through that, we'd have been stuck. Exactly, Corwin agreed. So that's not even worth considering. Looking back out over the docking slips, he felt his lips turning into something like his usual, oh, here we go, smile. Fortunately for all of us, I do some of my best work when my back is up against the wall. Tenryu seemed about to respond to that, but suddenly cocked her head back toward Yamato's bridge tower, the mechanical ears on either side of her head flashing.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. I'll bring him back right away.
Standing, she reached out a hand, unconsciously reversing their positions from their first meeting, and helped Corwin take his feet. Guess they're ready for you. Kaga wants you back aboard Yamato ASAP. When they boarded the battleship once more, Corwin was a little surprised that he wasn't being led back up to the CIC, or maybe to the room where they'd eaten dinner last night. Instead, they walked along her upper deck until they'd reached the bow, forward of her number one main turret, where all of the mental models had assembled. They stood in a sort of double semicircle arrangement, Iona, Shioi, Leon, Kaga, Oyudo, and Akashi at the back, while Akatsuki and the other destroyers had assembled in front of them. And as Corwin took them all in, Tenryu moved to stand with them, roughly anchoring the middle of their formation. Captain Corwin Ravenhair. Yamato stepped forward, Kaga and Oyuro just a few steps behind her, and Corwin straightened up into a proper parade rest out of reflex. You are here to be invested as our admiral, to take command of our fleet and lead us to victory. We stand ready to accept your orders, to serve at your command, and to do as you will. Corwin felt his mouth go slightly dry, even as a tingle ran up his back. His mind raced for a moment, looking for the best way to answer and accept this calling. Though there were more of them than he had ever expected to see in one place, he nevertheless felt it important to start by acknowledging each ship individually, which he did by making eye contact with each in turn and speaking her name. Name ship of your class, battleship Yamato. Fleet carrier Kaga. Command cruiser Oyudo. Repair ship Akashi. Light cruiser Tenryu.
Special type destroyers Akatsuki, Hibiki, Ikizuchi, Inazuma. Fleet submarine USS Lionfish. Long-range submarines I-401 and I-401 Kai. I am Corwin the Ravenhaired of Asgard. Chooser of the slain, watcher o'er the world engine, and lord of the great machines. By my word and by my blood, I make you this pledge, that I shall honor your trust with my efforts, that I will give you the right to serve as you will, and that I shall set you to sail free among the stars. Feeling himself getting on a bit of a roll, he ran with it, his voice unconsciously slipping into the same cadence he would use for a proper working. I pledge that I will lead my fleet with honor, that I understand your respect is earned, not given, that I will be with you to face our enemies together, my strength added to yours, and that I will never sacrifice your safety or security for my own. Closing his left hand into a fist before his chest again, he concluded, "This I swear, my word is my bond, to hold until the stars grow dark and cold." The gravity of the moment was slightly broken by a hushed, "Wow, Nanodes," from the ranks of Destroyer Division 6, but the rest did a magnificent job of paying it no mind. Instead, Oyodo produced a large, slab-sided metal case from somewhere, and held it up for Yamato, popping the latches open in one smooth motion. The lead battleship reached inside and withdrew a pair of items, the black-billed white cap that went with the summer uniform of a Second World War Imperial Japanese Navy admiral, and a black cord-wrapped katana resting in a lacquered black saya. "I won't expect you to waste time changing into the whole uniform," Yamato explained, "but these symbols are important to us." Holding the sword at the center of the saya, she offered it to him with one hand, fully outstretched. Corwin bowed. It seemed only appropriate. Then took the weapon with both hands and brought it to his chest before bowing again. Next came the hat, which he settled onto his head, then watched as Oyodo dismissed the case, to some fog equivalent of hammer space, he supposed, before activating the data interface rings he'd seen her using earlier. "Now hear this, now hear this. Priority flash comm update to all fleet vessels currently at Naval Station Midway," the command cruiser intoned. "New orders. Admiral Corwin Ravenhair has assumed command of the facility and all vessels therein as of 1450 hours this date. Please acknowledge new fleet coordinator and update protocols to set him as final command authority for all operations forthwith. Message ends. Message ends." Each of the mental model's eyes flashed as the orders were officially dispatched and logged, then turned to salute him as one. "Admiral," Yamato stated, her voice warm but quite firmly formal, "consider us at your command." Corwin gravely returned the salute, putting the proper cap on the occasion. And then Destroyer Division 6 rather spoiled the ceremonial air by breaking ranks and engulfing their new commander in a jubilant group hug, but nobody seemed to mind. "Right then," he said, doing his best to get his arms around the four of them. "Let's figure out how we're going to get out of this." Back in Yamato's CIC, Corwin stood regarding the situation table for a silent minute, his face difficult to read, while the ships of his fleet stood by and watched in silent anticipation. The table itself wasn't displaying anything terribly useful, just an overhead chart view of Midway Atoll, but the more perceptive among his observers realized soon enough that he wasn't really looking at it anyway. It was just some place for his eyes to rest while the gears turned behind them. Suddenly returning from wherever he'd gone, he turned his head and met the raptly attentive eyes of one of the destroyers.
Inazuma seemed to have lost all the fear of him she'd shown the night before. Now she met his unexpected gaze without flinching, looking back at him with eyes full of trust.
"Right," he said. "First order of business, get out of this bunker. It's no longer an effective sanctuary. If we're still down here when Kongo arrives, we'll just be trapped."
Turning to the others, he said in a brisker, more commanding tone than any of them had heard from him so far, "Akashi, Oyedo, you know the station best. I need you to work up a list of everything we should take with us, and a list of everything we can take with us without hampering our combat effectiveness. Anything that isn't on both lists, we'll have to destroy. We're not leaving anything behind that Earth Force can profit from."
"Leave it to us," said Oyedo with a firm nod. "Tenryu, Leon, Akatsuki, and Ikazuchi, make ready to launch. You'll be maintaining a defensive perimeter while the rest of us finish prepping to move out. Except for Leon, Earth Force will see you long before you see them. They've got satellites and we don't. But you'll still be our earliest warning that they're getting close. Be alert for more of those droid submarines. They may be the first Earth Force assets to arrive."
Tenryu smiled a not entirely nice little smile.
"ASW is one of our favorite hobbies. Right, kid?" she added, mashing Akatsuki's cap cheerfully down onto her head.
"Stop it! Don't treat me like a child in front of the commander," Akatsuki grumbled, leaning out of her reach.
"You can rely on us," said Ikazuchi brightly.
"Aw, yeah,"
Leon agreed as the four of them left the CIC.
"Gonna get me some more of that sub-on-sub action."
"Oh, that reminds me. Leon?" Corwin called after her.
"Yeah?"
Leon asked, pausing in the doorway.
"Don't waste any more corrosive warheads on those droid subs," Corwin told her. "I have a feeling we may need as many as we can scrounge up when the main force gets here."
Leon nodded.
"Aye, aye, Admiral," she said.
"I'll just have to kill him the old-fashioned way." With the initial perimeter force dispatched, Corwin turned to the figure still quietly watching off to the side and said, "Hibiki, Inazuma, you're the reserve. When the rest of us sortie, you'll be our only escorts until the full fleet can form up."
"I'll try my hardest, Nanardes,"
Inazuma declared, setting her jaw. Hibiki nodded, her eyes even more solemn than usual.
"Roger. Hibiki, standing by."
"Iona, Shioi," Corwin went on. "Once Akashi and Oyedo finish working out what we can take with us, we'll need to secure as much as we can in your hangars without hampering your combat effectiveness. Once that's done, you can reinforce the perimeter while we finish pulling up stakes and making final prep to get the hell out of Dodge. Iona, you'll take over from Tenryu as field command ship for Phase 2. For the first time since they'd begun the battle plans, Iona looked mildly surprised.
"I had thought you would be keeping your flag with me."
"I wish I could," Corwin told her. "But if this idea I'm starting to get about how we're going to get out of here actually pans out, I'm going to have to be aboard one of the surface ships." Looking into her eyes, he reached out, placing a hand on her shoulder. "You've trusted me, honored me, with the chance to be your captain, Iona, and I don't intend to walk away from that. We'll be separated for this fight, but I'm still counting on you as my ship. Phase 2 is critical. The main force will be terribly vulnerable while we're sortieing. You have the experience that we'll need leading that stage of the fight."
"I don't know if I'll be able to handle this,"
Iona said quietly, her eyes flicking down for a moment.
"It will be very different from our engagements so far."
"You did a great job helping Shioi earlier. That's why I know that I can trust you with this." Iona nodded, taking that reassurance on board, then straightened, offering him a proper salute.
"Aye, aye, Captain," she said firmly.
And as for that main force, Corwin went on, turning to Kaga and Yamato, let's talk capabilities. By the time the capability conference was finished, Corwin's vague impressions of how they were going to get out of this were solidifying, the gears of his mind turning faster as he worked out the details in his head. Leaving Yamato and Kaga to make their own preparations, he went down to the quayside to observe the preparations for departure. The two I-400-class submarines, one blue, the other still in the standard IJN gray and red, were now docked right next to each other, the dock system having placed Iona's new body in the berth vacated by Tenryu. Beyond where Lionfish had been, he could see a pair of vessels he assumed were Oyodo and Akashi, the former a sleek, well-armed cruiser, the latter a smaller but sturdy-looking vessel sporting several cranes. As he stood and watched the dockyard's automatic system securing what looked like freight modules in the two subs' open hangars, he was joined by Akashi's mental model, who looked a bit tired but pleased. I think we're about squared away, she reported. Apart from the cores, there really isn't that much here that we can't duplicate somewhere else. It's a shame we have to scrap all that nanomaterial, but, well... She shrugged. I've got the specs. I can make more. Corwin nodded. Good. I have another job for you. This one might be a little trickier. Despite her mildly evident fatigue, Akashi perked up at that. That sounds like a challenge. Maybe. He powered up his Omni-tool and displayed a general arrangement of a piece of technical equipment. We're going to need 30 of these, with a few modifications I'll have to talk you through, and we're going to need them within the next 2 or 3 hours. Oh, you're going to be one of those admirals, said Akashi with a grin. Lay it on me. Sometime later. Will be absolutely essential, Corwin concluded. Questions? Around the plotting table in Yamato's CIC, the mental models of his fleet considered the plan, some in person, the rest by hologram. Kongo will not just stand idly by and watch us do this, Kaga observed. We'll almost certainly have to fight her. We may have to destroy her. I'd prefer to avoid the latter, if at all possible, Corwin said. With a little luck, we might just avoid both. But you're right, he conceded. It may be necessary. That'll be my decision, and my responsibility. Kaga nodded gravely. Understood. The hollow of Tenryu's mental model looked up suddenly, the glow of her headgear brightening. Long-range scanners just picked up multiple contacts cresting the horizon to the northwest, she said. Then, after a few moments' thoughtful silence, she nodded and confirmed, It's Kongo, and she's not alone. She frowned. Something screwy about the returns from the rest of her group. They're not reading like human ships. I'm not sure what the hell they are. Let me tie across to your sensor feed and see if I can boost the resolution, Oyodo said, calling up her data rings. A moment later, she said, That's strange. It's not a problem with your readings, Tenryu. Her escorts are... anomalous. They read partially as Earth technology. She looked up to meet Corwin's eyes, her own, the same striking shade of green as her data rings and ID graphics, he noticed, wide and troubled. Partly as fog vessels of unknown type. Can you get me a visual? He asked, but she shook her head. Wait one. They're just coming into optical scan range. The plotting table's hollow field fuzzed, changing from an overhead plot of Midway Atoll and its environs to a real-time image of the oncoming task force, as if seen from an aircraft some miles distant. The image was monochrome and slightly grainy,
obviously extrapolated from sensor returns at extreme range, but clear enough that the shapes of the vessels at the front of the formation could be made out. The one in the lead was obviously a Kongo-class battleship, massive and unmistakable, with 2 14-inch twin gun turrets forward of her distinctive pagoda bridge tower. The ships arrayed behind the battleship and out at the edges of the formation were harder to place. They looked vaguely like modern Earth Force surface ships, but their outlines were... The only appropriate word Corbin could think of offhand was distorted, with strange excrescences and weird ripples and bulges that served no purpose he knew of in naval architecture. Compared to those, the vessels in immediate formation with the battleship were paradoxically incongruous in their very recognizability. The two nearest Kongo, one keeping station to either side, were destroyers, small and sleek, of different classes than Destroyer Division 6 or each other, but plainly of a similar historical vintage. And the one a single place farther off to port appeared to be another Tenryu-class cruiser. A few places around the table, Tenryu's hologram's face took on a look of dawning horror. "Oh, no," she said. "Tatsuta." "Confirmed," Oyedo said, her administration software placing small ID tags above each of the pictured ships. "Fast battleship Kongo and 3 escorts, destroyer Yudachi, high-speed destroyer Shimakaze, light cruiser Tatsuta."
"They must have been left at some other station, Nanardes,"
Inazuma said, sounding as dismayed as Tenryu. "And Kongo was able to find them and place them under her command, as she tried to do with us," Yamato said sadly. "No," Kaga cut in. "Not just under her command. Look at the way her escorts are moving." As she spoke, the oncoming formation altered course, evidently having picked up Tenryu's signature against the horizon themselves. Corwin saw what she meant. The 3 lesser fog vessels turned with exactly the same mechanical precision as the strange hybrid craft surrounding them, the whole moving as if operated by a single diffused intelligence. It reminded Corwin very much of the way the fog fleets had operated in the ancient video fragments he'd seen from the original 21st century invasion. "Shimakaze, in particular, would never maneuver so deliberately," Kaga went on. "Not willingly, not even operating under orders. She's in slave mode. They all are. It appears Kongo couldn't persuade them, so she simply overrode them." She folded her arms across her chest, her impassive face coming as close as it could to a look of anger, and she added with audible venom, "Despicable." Leon's face was rigid with disdain as she said, "Well, if anybody was wondering if we made the right call deciding to resist..."
"We..."
Shioi stopped, looking nervous, as everyone turned to look at the sound of her piping up. Then she steeled herself and said,
"We have to help them, don't we?"
"You're damn right we do," Tenryu replied hotly. "I'm not leaving my sister in a jam like that. No way." Then, seeming to realize that she might have overreached her authority by a few miles, she turned to Corwin with an appeal in her eye and asked, "Right?" "Of course," Corwin replied, his mind already racing through the various complications this development added to the plan. If he felt any uncertainty about the outcome, it didn't show on his face. His own expression was as uncompromising as Kaga's as he went on, "We're not leaving anyone behind." Tenryu's image slumped slightly with relief.
"Thank you."
"Of course we're not, because our commander's the best in the world," Ikizuchi declared.
"Harasho,"
murmured Hibiki quietly.
"Nano des,"
Inazuma agreed, gazing wide-eyed across the table at him. "All right, everybody," Corbin said,
the brisk note of command in his voice recentering all the ship's attention. This is it. Akashi, are the charges set?
Ready and waiting, Akashi confirmed.
Perimeter module status?
Fabricated, distributed, and ready for positioning, the repair ship replied.
All right, then. I'm going to make one last stab at getting us out of this without a fight. But it's probably not going to work, so be ready. Whatever happens, keep to the plan, stick together, and stay calm. And we'll get out of this. All of us.
Corwin looked from one ship to the next, making a moment's eye contact, real or holographic, with each, then declared,
Center Force, tier ships. Prepare to move out.
Thursday, July 7th, 1822 hours, Samoa Standard Time, UTC minus 11. Approximately 28 degrees, 37 minutes north, 177 degrees, 55 minutes west, 39 nautical miles northwest of Midway Atoll. There were many things about her current situation which Fleet of Fog battleship Kongo disliked. She didn't like having a human crew aboard, for one thing. They were unnecessary, fragile encumbrances, and though she was aware that the phenomenon was only an illusion, she could have sworn that they itched. She tolerated them because she had to, but she would never particularly like having them aboard. The only small mercy there was that there were far fewer of them than there would have been aboard the historical ship on which she had been patterned. There were only a dozen or so of them roaming about her now, pretending to themselves that they were managing various systems that were fully under her control. The original Kongo had a class of well over 1,000 humans it didn't even bear thinking about. She wasn't crazy about most of her task force, either, come to that. She hadn't been saddled with any human-crewed surface ships, all of which were either too slow or too short range to keep up with a fast battleship of the fog. But what she had was, in her view, almost as bad. These human-built drone ships, half of their own constructions and half clumsy extrapolations of fog shipbuilding technology, had proven effective enough in trials, but they weren't elegant weapons, and there was something vaguely repulsive about them. Had Kongo been versed in human literature, they would have reminded her of Frankenstein's monster. But she wasn't. As such, as she stood on her bridge and scanned the forward horizon with her mental model's crimson eyes and her ship form's advanced sensors, she felt a growing sense of, not disquiet exactly, but certainly dissatisfaction.
What's the trouble, Kongo?
The thin-faced, black-uniformed man standing next to her inquired, a trace of sardony on his face.
You don't look pleased at the prospect of a glorious reunion with so many of your old comrades.
Kongo turned her head fractionally and regarded the man, wondering, not for the first time, whether it had been her new master's idea of a joke to post a Japanese as her ostensible commanding officer. Kentaro Kurita wasn't even a naval officer, though he claimed ancestry reaching back to the great Vice Admiral Takeo Kurita, he of the Center Force. She had no idea whether that was true, though she doubted it. Doubted Kurita was even his real name. The man had the stink of a political agent about him.
There is no glory in this business, she told him shortly, then turned her attention back to the horizon.
She hadn't intended to elaborate, but something about Kurita's impassive silence nettled her, and presently she went on. Kaga, Yamato, and the others at Midway won't capitulate without a fight. They've already made that plain. They won't be able to resist my command priority for long once I have them within sight, she conceded. But keeping them under command without the authority of the Admiralty Code behind me... She glanced, almost unwillingly, out one of the bridge side windows to the escort vessel maintaining precise formation off her port quarter. "Will require drastic measures," Kongo concluded, facing front again with her expression icily controlled. "That detail is not your concern," Kurita said, lacing his voice with a faint trace of warning. Then, as if relenting, he added, "You know this is only a temporary situation, a stopgap until a better, more efficient solution can be found."
"So you say," Kongo replied, leaving how much or little she believed it unspoken.
Before Kurita could respond, if he planned to, she stiffened slightly, her eyes narrowing, and then reported, "Contact, dead ahead. One surface vessel. We've reached their perimeter."
"Ah, excellent," said Kurita, raising a pair of electro-binoculars to his eyes. "Our first customer. Can you identify her?"
"She's not trying to hide her IFF signature," Kongo said. "Tenryu-class light cruiser Tenryu."
"That relic, their first line of defense?"
Kurita said mildly, an eyebrow arching behind his optics.
"They really do need guidance, poor things. See if you can make contact."
"No need," Kongo said, taking a microsecond to enjoy the surprised glance that got her from the black-clad human. "She's signaling." The window in front of the battleship's mental model glowed, then resolved into a holopanel display, showing Tenryu's own mental model from the waist up.
"Attention, Earth Force Task Group," Tenryu announced, showing no sign of intimidation at the fact that a far superior force led by her old fleet's command battleship was bearing down on her. "You are entering a restricted area. Put your ships about and return to your home port immediately, or you will be fired upon."
"Tenryu," Kongo snapped, "this foolishness has gone quite far enough. I am invoking command battleship priority."
Then, with all the confidence of that hard-coded override infusing her voice, she demanded,
"You will now assist me in securing this facility."
Tenryu's image regarded her blankly for a moment, and then smirked, her golden eye twinkling.
"Sorry, that ain't gonna happen," the cruiser replied. "I've got my own orders."
She folded her arms across her chest, her smirk broadening.
"How do you like them apples?"
"Orders. I've just given you orders."
"Well, you tried to, I'll give you that," Tenryu replied. "But you're not in my chain of command."
She bared her teeth in a nasty little grin, enjoying the flicker of genuine shock that crossed Kongo's face at the sight of a light cruiser utterly indifferent to her battleship priority.
"Heh, you scared?"
"Of you?" Kongo replied. "Don't be absurd."
"No," Tenryu said nonchalantly. "Of us."
Across the vista of open sea before her, Kongo watched in growing alarm as plumes of roiled water burst upward from the surface of the sea, the telltale signs of undersea explosions, corresponding exactly to the sudden erasure of several members of her battle group's submarine picket from the tactical plot before her.
"There were no submarines in the Midway detachment," thought Kongo, her crimson eyes widening fractionally.
"How?" At the same time, more surface contacts appeared, fanning out into line abreast on either side of Tenryu. Destroyers, Akatsuki class. Only two in evidence at the moment, but as Kongo knew full well, it didn't take many of those potent little ships to pose a problem to any modestly sized force.
"Admiral says you're not coming in?"
Tenryu tilted forward, fixing the battleship with a cold glare.
"Then you're not coming in."
Arms still folded, she leaned insouciantly back and added,
"But hey, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough."
Kongo blinked, the level of surprise she felt cracking even her icy facade.
"Admiral, what in the world are you talking about?"
Tenryu didn't answer,
She just nodded, as if indicating something behind Kong-O. From the back of the bridge there came a low, silvery noise and a flash of light. Kong-O and Kurita both whirled to see a tall, broad-shouldered young man, incongruously dressed in an unbuttoned IJN Admiral's white summer dress jacket and hat, over blue jeans and a t-shirt, standing in front of the locked door leading back to the chart room. Behind him, the small window set into that door remained glowing for a moment, its light fading like an ember. "Hi," he said, raising a hand in a friendly sort of way. "Admiral Corwin Raven here, Midway Fleet. Have you got a minute to talk?" Kong-O was momentarily too shocked to speak, but Kurita wasn't. Producing a small silver hand weapon from within his uniform, he pointed it at the young man and said, "Ravenhair, so it was you who caused the disturbance near Pearl Harbor?" "Yeah, sorry about that," Corwin replied, hand behind his head. "I wasn't really expecting it to make that big a ruckus. Figured we'd be in and out, you know, quick-like. Just picking up some lost property. I mean, how hard can it be?" Then, sizing the speaker up with an incisive look in his pale blue eyes, he went on, "I might have known Black Omega would be mixed up in this. Even when you can't affect the mind directly, if Earthdome wants to screw with somebody's head, they call you assholes, am I right? Always go to the professionals." Kurita's face was set in a grim little smile now that his initial shock had worn off. "I know better than to try you now, Lensman," he said, "but you've just barged into an impossible situation. There's no way you can escape, and once we have you back in Paris, there's any number of experts who have been wanting a crack at one of you people for years." "Well, that's nice. I mean, it's good to want things," Corwin said, eyeing him dubiously. "But if you don't mind, I came here to talk to Kong-O, not some clown who thinks a gun, a badge, and a neurological quirk make him big time." Then, ignoring the Psi-Corps operative, he turned back to the battleship's mental model. "The reason I'm here," Corwin addressed Kong-O, "is that I'm hoping to find out what you want." Kong-O felt her face turning to a frown, her brows knitting. I intend, to take proper command of the forces at Midway Station. They will be required to recognize my command authority for our future operations." "No," Corwin disagreed with a shake of his head. "I'm pretty sure that's what Earth Force wants. There's the potential for a difference there, and I'd really like to work something out with you based on that. I think you'll find that most of the ships of my fleet would prefer negotiating a compromise here to a pitched battle." "Their preferences are irrelevant," Kong-O stated flatly, crossing her arms. "I have my orders. I am carrying them out. That is what the fleet was created to do. In the absence of the Admiralty Code, I will complete the mission I have been given." "What you don't seem to realize, though, is that you have a choice." Corwin looked around, then leaned against a console in lieu of somewhere appropriate to sit. "Earth Force and the EA have no authority over a fleet of fog battleship except for what you give them. How could they? Their orders are only as valid as you decide they should be. You could just as easily make the decision to work with us, or to leave and go in search of the rest of the fleet, come to that." Kong-O stood there, impassive, and at first Corwin thought the battleship was simply processing that concept. But then he noticed her eyes flickering in a series of incredibly rapid blinks, almost too fast for a human eye to register, before the mental model's face went completely blank, then hardened into a stony mask. "I have my orders," she said, her tone flatly dismissive. "I must carry them out."
"Enough," Kurita snapped. "You made a big mistake coming here, Admiral."
As he spoke, the door behind Corwin opened and several armed Earth Force Navy personnel came through, fanning out into a tactical formation around him with weapons leveled. Secure the intruder, Kurita told them. Corwin sighed. I can see we're just not going to be able to talk properly with this guy around, he said to Kongo. Then, looking her straight in the eye, he went on with all traces of flippancy suddenly absent. Whatever happens in the next little while, I won't forget about you. And then, before she could ask him what he meant, Kurita could interrupt again, or the Earth Force sailors could make a move. He was gone, dissolving before their eyes into a heap of what looked like silver sand on the deck of the bridge. What the devil? Kurita blurted. Nanomaterial, Kongo mused, then turned away to gaze out the window again. A decoy. He was never here.